And welcome, folks, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. We're back. Hey, I'm back. Thank you so much, folks, for your patience as a number of things have come up recently. And I mean, some pretty severe things, including, and this is one, I suppose I definitely we can put this in the win column. Early this week, we got a call. There was a missing 10-year-old girl that it was a parental issue, but it was actually more than that. And I'm not going to get too deep into it, but there was an endangered, child endangerment situation. The police refused to get involved, saying the customary saying, it's a civil matter. It's a civil matter. Believing, of course, this was merely only a husband and wife disagreement, which it was far beyond that. But no one would take the time to listen. Anyway, it involved a 10-year-old girl. Here's the bottom line. After about 36 hours of intense investigation and work, the girl is safe. Everything is done. It's all taken care of. All taken care of. Now, the district attorney is looking into filing some charges as well, against the appropriate people. So that's a good thing. So that's kind of been the last, I don't know, few days, which, you know, again, it's no excuse for not showing up, but man, I've got to tell you, it's just been one thing after another after another. So we appreciate the fact that you understand, and the fact that we are more than just a mouth behind a microphone. We put our money, efforts, whatever you want to call it, where our mouths are, okay, in trying to help people. And I want to congratulate, too, Shatter Ops. They, of course, have been doing such great work along with Save Them and Vets for Child Rescue. And, of course, they've been under attack so much. It's just so incredible what we see with respect to the attacks coming in. And that includes us, too. Believe it or not, it includes us. So, but you know, we figure as long as those attacks keep coming, we're over the target. All right. I really have a great show lined up for you. Eric and I were talking during this whole cluster of stuff that was going on. And I said, you know, I mean, we really haven't had time for ourselves. And what I mean by that is you and I, folks, we haven't had time just to talk about how things are. Talk about the news, talk about current events, but do so on a larger scale. And it's been a while. And I was looking at the different headlines. I was reading different books when I could. Boy, that meant things, you know, things like that mess up a lot of schedules, I'll tell you. So anyway, I rearranged some other schedules, but it all worked out. We were thinking about how things are going right now. You know, where I'm at, I don't know where you're at, folks, in different parts of the country and different parts of the world, but gasoline is at $3.39 a gallon. This is reality. Because the instruction manual says so, and in our particular vehicle, we've got to upgrade the gas as opposed to the lowest, you know, the 87 octane. It's got to go. And I think that's just a whole big, I really think that's just a big sham. Anyway, but we have to use a higher octane gasoline, which costs more. So we're paying $3.39. I did have a quick trip to the grocery store. I did check on grocery prices today. Yes, there are eggs still at $10. I think it was for 18 though. You know, the organic farm raised, I don't know, the chickens have heating blankets or air conditioned coops, or I don't know. They're put on a leash and exercise daily. I who knows? But apparently these are some serious eggs. But then, of course, you have them down to the normal eggs, whatever you want to call them, normal eggs at between $2 and $3 a dozen. Okay, so I mean, so the economy or what we're spending, that's still a factor. It's still impacting us. We as a platform, we give. I'll explain a little bit of what we do. For example, we sell coffee, right? And we split that money. We take the profits. We pay all of the expenses, and the profits we push toward, give to a couple of different organizations for child rescue. And we keep probably, I don't know, I think 7% of the profits, roughly. That's how it kind of calculates out. But that's okay, because it's going for a good cause. We see the results, and we're part of that too. But the reason I mentioned all of that, I mean, and of course, we exist because of your support. Many, many, many people have come up to us and said, hey, we can monetize you this way or that way, and but you've got to plug this product. And I said, wait, this is not what we're doing this for. If the people want us to stay, we're going to stay by the grace of God and by the grace of the support of the people. If not, then, hey, it's fine. I mean, it's fine, because we still have the on-the-ground work that we're doing. So that's kind of where we're at with this. But we're looking at the different platforms that are talking about some of the stuff, the same stuff that we talk about. And we want to dig deeper. We don't want to waste your time. You don't need to sit here and listen to, you know, Trump did this, Putin did this, Zelensky did this, or whatever. You don't need that. You can get that anywhere. And opinions on that kind of stuff, well, they're a dime a dozen. Well, you know what they say about opinions, right? Well, there you have it. So I was thinking, in fact, that was early for an appointment today, which had to be rescheduled. Anyway, and boy, some of these appointments just wipes me the hell out. So I apologize if I sound a little bit wiped out. But I was thinking, you know, the bigger picture, reading about from a biblical perspective, where are we going? Where are things going to end up? What's the timetable? What should we as Christian conservatives really be looking at? Where are our priorities? You know, I was thinking about legacies. And I'm not talking about the egotistical type of legacies. We're all going to leave our own independent legacy after we leave this earth. Would everyone agree with that? Folks listening, in fact, I'm going to tune into the Rumble chat right now. Would you agree with that? That we or if you're listening to this on X or wherever, but on Rumble, you can comment. We are going to leave our own legacies. And you may think, well, I don't have a legacy. I mean, what's my legacy going to be? Well, you make a difference. You're making a difference, whether it's with a parent, a child, friends, work, family. You're making a difference, right? So, you know, I look at, and I'm not going to get into it, but I look at my life. I'm thinking, man, have I missed a lot of opportunities? Have I messed up a lot of things? Have I really? But it's okay to kind of acknowledge that, but don't stay there. Look at the bigger picture and look at the good that you're doing with others. Okay. Which brought me to the point that I'm looking at other platforms. As I said, I'm thinking, what is their objective? Is their objective to educate, inform, and to help their listeners, their viewers? Or is it just to exist for the purpose of getting money and making a living, making money from doing this? Hell, you can have a TikTok channel and sit there and make arm fart noises, and I guess you can make a living doing that. I don't know. People watch that stuff, right? But if we are going to address pretty much all of the issues that we are faced with on a daily basis, whether it's from the prices of our groceries to what's in our food at the grocery store, to the geoengineering stuff that's poisoning our water, our food, if we are to consider all of that, then I think we need to identify exactly who is behind it. And believe it or not, that's not an easy thing to do. You might think, well, yeah, it is. I mean, all the evidence is there. You can look. There was a video that I saw, and I watched it, and then I watched it again. And I left it alone for a while, and I went back and I watched it again. And the video itself is from Clayton Morris and his wife, redacted.news. And the guest that they had on is Derek Bros. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. Talking about who's really running the world. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. And think about it in terms of how flippant we are and how quick we are with saying it's this group or that group or this person, and it's the WEF, it's the CFR, it's the Trilateral Commission, it's Bill Gates, it's all of them, it's none of them, it's the Jews, it's the Nazis, it's the... But when you really, and believe me, the bias and ideology behind the statements by people who make them is extremely strong. So I want to start out today, tonight, this specific program, because again, it's just us. We don't have anyone talking in our ear. I don't have to worry about guests coming on, and no, it's just us. Let's have a conversation about this. So the video I'm referring to, it's going to be in the show notes. It's going to be video 1, cut 1. you can't believe who's really running the world. Now, this is a long clip. I'm going to play a few minutes and then stop, and we're going to talk about this in a few minutes more, and then we'll talk about it, because there's a lot of value to what is said here. And then the guest has a series. In fact, he created a series. And I don't, I mean, I'm promoting this. I watch the various, it's broken into seasons, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then episodes like 1, 2, 3, 4. So I watched what was available in addition to this clip more than once. And there are some absolutely important points that are made here. The important points is, I think the biggest point, the most important point, is that we need to drop the bias or the predefined ideology, thinking that we've got the flipping answers. We have the answers. You know, a little knowledge can be a dangerous thing, okay? And I believe that most of us have a lot of knowledge and a lot of the answers. Some of us, though, you know, man, they have never, I mean, it's always the Jews, it's always the Zionists, it's always this, it's always that. And this is addressed in that clip or in that segment. I thought it was addressed better than I could ever address it. I realize the value of others' time, and that's why we use these video clips, because I certainly could take the time, contact this guest, and have him come on and ask the same questions and get the same answers. But you know what? That's already been done. So in support of really both platforms, both programs, Redacted as well as the guests, we can, instead of retreading old ground, we can certainly push, publicize, and promote what was already done. This was done about, I think, almost a week ago now. So I'd like to introduce this to you. Video one, HagmanPI.com is the show. Link to the entire video, as well as the guests' videos, which I'll tell you here after a few moments. But please stay with me and listen to the introduction. And then listen to what the guest has to say initially. It'll be probably 4.5 minutes or so, but stay with me on this, because this is beautiful. This was absolutely exquisitely done. My hat goes off to Redacted as well as this guest. Absolutely incredible, nicely done, very nicely done. Before I get any further, I want to do this. Can I ask you guys a favor? You know, one of the hardest working guys I know and just trying to get the word out is Rob Pugh from Wisconsin Christian News. By the way, folks, next Tuesday I'm going to be a guest on, God willing, if things don't blow up in the meantime. No, I'm committed to do it. I'm going to be a guest on the Wisconsin Christian News next Tuesday night. I'll give you some additional information here later, but I'd love for you to tune in. What you can do, what it is, it's broadcast on television, but on the backside is a link. It's like a Zoom link. It's like our meetings. You can join. And you can ask questions, and you can, yeah, man, it's great. So next Tuesday, I didn't bring my date book with me. Yeah, Wisconsin Christian News. But more importantly, tomorrow is Rob Pugh's birthday. And man, he's been working his tail off and he's just dragging. And he certainly would love to hear from you a happy birthday wish. If you just go to WisconsinChristianNews.com and just give him a little bit of a, give him some loving. Don't tell him it's from me. Just give him some loving. Give him a happy birthday wish. That's Rob Pugh. And I'll put his email address or link to his email at HagmanPI.com. But it's available at WisconsinChristianNews.com. All right, getting back to the subject at hand. This is from Redacted. Again, full credit, exquisitely done interview. Very important. You've got to listen to this because this is really the infrastructure of everything else that we talk about. Whether we talk about Clinton's and Obama and whatever, this is kind of like the building blocks of all of that. And until we really, really understand, and I mean, understand objectively without bias. And in my case, man, I've got to lose that emotional, I'm going to wring your neck stuff. You know what I mean? I got to lose that because that does cloud your judgment. So, but please pay attention to this. I'll be looking at the chat, but pay attention to this and we'll talk about it in segments. Eric, good to talk to you, by the way. Glad you're here. Eric, you there? You home? Okay. All right, my friend. Let's go. Video one. Here it is.
Who really runs the world? That is what Derek Brose aims to uncover in his series, The Pyramids of Power. He says that the deep state is an overused term and oversimplified, usually leaving out the deepest of the deep state. Brose argues that the deep state has become this oversimplified catch-all, one that sort of leaves out the most entrenched and hidden forces. And he set out to map the real architecture of power in his series. A lot of times on X, we have these fights where we oversimplify things because as humans, that's a natural tendency. Like, oh, it's the globalists, it's the Nazis, it's the Zionists. Those are convenient placeholders, easy to say, but too shallow to really explain who is truly subverting the will of the people. So Derek Brose joins us today to tell us about the Pyramids of Power and episode 17, which is coming out right now, where he actually names. Who is the deepest of the deep state? Derek, it's great to see you. Thank you for joining me.
Eric, can you pause that for a second?
Back, Natalie.
And push me to the left on that or to the side. I just want to address that. What did you think of that synopsis, folks in the chat, maybe listening to this? What did you think of that synopsis? I thought that was well laid out. And I thought that was really important to me because we have to, I think we have to come to a common language attribute there, attributes, plural. I think we have to use the proper linguistics. And I think we have to separate fact from fiction. And I think she laid out the groundwork to do that. I just wanted to give her kudos on that and see if you agree with me in chat. Okay, you can take me off and continue with this.
Appreciate it.
Okay, what did you think of that summary? What you aim to do is a lot like eating an elephant, is really, who is it when we talk about that's what they want, that's what they're doing? So tell us about the overarching project and who is the Pyramids of Power?
Yeah, thank you for that. So, you know, I started this project actually back in 2018. It was originally a live presentation I was giving during a tour I was doing, a speaking tour. And that ended up being a 3-hour presentation, and people were kind enough to sit through it. But afterwards, I thought maybe there's a better format to present this information. You know, I've been researching these topics for going on 16 years now. And I find that sometimes when you're first waking up, as we like to say, you consume a lot of information. And I know I did, books, documentaries, podcasts, etc. And you start to kind of form your knowledge base of what you believe about the world, what's going on. Like you said, maybe you think it's the Zionists or the globalists or different pieces of this puzzle. And I wanted to revisit my original research, things that I maybe believed before, but with time have realized, okay, it's not as accurate as I thought it was. It's not as true as I might have believed. And to really answer this question, like, is there really a group of international organizations and people that are trying to manipulate our world? That was the goal of this series, which started out as 10 episodes and now has evolved to be 17 episodes. And we basically tried to look at each of the pieces of the puzzle. As you know, today we're focusing on the final question of who's at the top, but the series really tries to kind of walk people into that process. So the first episode is big education, then establishment media, and then big tech. And it progressively gets deeper and deeper as we go through it. And I consider this to be a true crime documentary, not a conspiracy documentary, because everything that I report in the series is factual and can be sourced to the primary source documents, to government documents, and to firsthand knowledge. And when you really start to look at that information and you do so without hyperbole and without speculation, you realize that truth is really stranger than fiction. And there's so much that we can actually prove about this to prove that there are interlocking groups and organizations and individuals which do have an agenda which is different from what they publicly claim. And so I've been working on this series now since 2020. We started releasing the first season. We released them in seasons of 4 episodes at a time, and people can watch the first 16 for free at thepyramidofpower.net. And now we're down to the final episode, the 17th episode, which I wrote in March and April, and it turned into originally a 4-hour documentary. I decided we need to trim it down. So we got it down to 2 hours and 45 minutes. And decided to release that in 2 volumes, volume 1 and volume 2. Volume 1 is the one that you've now seen, the first part of the conclusion. And that's where, as you mentioned, we start to really look at, like, okay, we understand the institutions, big tech and the oil industry and all these different players that are a part of it, but who actually sits at the top? And throughout the series, familiar names come up, like Rockefeller and Rothschild and, you know, the World Economic
Forum
and
Gates.
Carnegie, yeah. Gates. Yeah, these familiar names, but I still don't think that those actually point to the true power behind it. So the goal of this final conclusion is, okay, now that we understand the infrastructure of this pyramid, who's sitting at the top or what is sitting at the top? And it's been a really deep dive. It took me about 2 months to write the entire conclusion. I do all the research. I do all the writing of the scripts, and then I do the audio narration, and I work with some really talented editors to make it really pop and visually appealing. And for the final conclusion, I've interviewed everybody from volume 1 features Patrick Wood, who is one of the oldest researchers on technocracy. He's been talking about it since the 70s. Peter Dale Scott, who's actually the originator of the term deep state in the English language. He's the one who kind of brought it over from Turkish. And Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope and Grand Theft World. He's a long-term researcher of the roundtable groups, which we also discuss in this chapter. And volume 2, which will be out in a couple of months, it features David Icke, James Corbett, you know, Mark Passio, Larkin Rose, a lot of long-term researchers. And my goal with this was to not kind of come in with my own conclusions, because as I said, I'm revisiting a lot of my own research and my own conclusions and questioning them. And so I didn't come in with, like, okay, I know I'm going to point at this group by the end of it. I was just like, let's look at all of these claims objectively. People say the deep state. What does that mean? People talk about the World Economic Forum and the Club of Rome and the Trilateral Commission. Let's look at the history of these organizations, the Bilderberg Group. And then in the end of volume 1, we do talk about this claim of the Committee of 300 is another popular claim, the roundtable groups. And then volume 2, it's going to get maybe a little more controversial, because I wanted to look at the most popular claims, which I'm sure you've seen out there on your travels on the internet, which is it's the Jews or it's the Jesuits or it's the Freemasons. And everybody's got their sort of pet group that they're certain it's them. And if you don't agree with them, then you must be a shill. You must be controlled opposition. I wanted to actually look at these claims and take them seriously. And here's what people believe. And here's what we can prove. And here's what's more speculative. And here's what we can disprove. And so, as you can imagine, that takes a lot of time and effort and digging and research. But I'm very proud of what we've put together, and I'm excited to share this with everybody.
If you can pause that for a second. I think what he said there was spot on. And just to tell you a little bit of background, because, as you know, and... no, hell hasn't frozen over yet. My third book, The Devil Within, it will be out very soon. And that addresses much of what I first experienced with the satanic ritual abuse. Okay. But it's a little bit more specific. All right. And it really laid the groundwork for the work we're doing today and what we see today. So when he says that he had to revisit his prior research, I did the same thing. I had to revisit the prior files and take a look at what I witnessed, what I experienced, we as an investigative body experienced and are experiencing today with a deeper understanding. So what he just said right there, I'm sure it's going to, you know, piss off a lot of, piss off some people, the more irrational. When I look at the chat, I see people, the majority of everyone there, 100%, 100% great people. But at times, certain people's reactions are so biased, dogmatic, and ingrained that they close themselves off to any kind of new information that might alter their paradigm. Do you understand what I mean? Now, I'm not picking on anyone. I'm just saying that by itself will hobble you if you are looking at this from a purely objective and investigative position. So please think about that. Yes, believe me, for example, you know, you've got the political Zionists who love war. Well, you've got the political neocons here who love war. Okay. Are they different? Well, there's a lot of overlap. Okay. But are they the only reason? Are they the only power brokers in, influencers? No, they're not. And are they the ones ultimately pulling the strings? No, they're not. That doesn't excuse behaviors. But it doesn't put the entire kibosh on their shoulders either. So that explanation that he gave, in my view, was absolutely spot on. And he does go through quite a bit. And I'm going to shut up and let him talk a little bit more here. And then we might jump in time because there is so much value to this. But folks, I would urge you to go to HagmanPI.com after the show is up tonight. It'll be after midnight. And then you click on the headline and it'll bring you all of the program notes. But click on that link, watch that episode, and then watch the guests, various chapters. The website is the Pyramid of Power.net, the Pyramid of Power.net. And that's where you're going to find everything. And it's very well done, but and the reason I'm spending time on this is because in order for us to talk about Bongino and of course the co-deputy director of the FBI, what? What's that about? Or the failures, perhaps, of Kash Patel. Are they failures, or are they a lot of some will, but not enough knowledge of the inner workings of that of the so-called deep state? I would say this is so important that, for example, what we're seeing with Bongino and the new co-deputy director and Kash Patel and Bondi, that's the attempt to navigate through the exact system that he is exposing. Some of this you know, some you don't. So I would much rather hit this on an intellectual basis. I recently told Eric the Tech, and I mean this sincerely, and I don't know how many people are like me, but when I see problems, every problem to me is like a nail, and I've got a flipping big hammer, and I'm ready. But sometimes that's not in our best interest. Sometimes it pays to think, to employ the intellectual prowess that we all have. And don't sell yourself short, because everyone listening and viewing this show tonight or at another time, I guarantee you, you've got more than you think you have in terms of that intellectual prowess. We talk, one more thing, we talk about body language, reading body language. We all do that. It doesn't matter. We all do it. You don't know you're doing it. You're not consciously doing it, but you're doing it. And you can also, and same with this, you can get better at it. You can learn more about it, because it's not surface deep. It's very deep. For example, one example, you know, I've used in the past where somebody is saying no but shaking their head yes, which is a contradiction of what they're saying. Of course, that indicates deception. You know, that's not necessarily 100% true. You're looking for change and clusters, and so you've got to be very careful. That's what I said earlier. A little bit of knowledge could be dangerous. So all of this combined, what we're sitting on, when I looked in the chat talking about Bongino and Patel and the failures and the we haven't seen this yet and that yet, this is all undergirded in my belief by exactly the system that he is exposing. And so far, from what I've seen, he's done a hell of a great job. Go ahead and continue that and get me the heck off the screen.
Well, what you're putting in front of those of us who disbelieve government narratives, you're putting a mirror up in front of us to show that we can't have these sort of lazy one-off groups to blame. And it makes sense that the predator class would not have really a shared identity. They seem to weave in and out. And I will say, your documentary is very Western based. A lot of it is about Western society, you know, so we can't say, oh, it's the Chinese who are subverting us, that kind of thing. So it shows us that it's never the right thing to scapegoat any one group because it explains things in a nice way, because it doesn't fit together neatly and nicely.
That's definitely one thing that I think is an important point, is that the further I dug into these different theories and claims, I realized that in a lot of areas there is truth. There's elements of truth in, I'd say, each of these areas, from Jesuits [S2] Yeah. [S1] Influence to Jewish power, Zionist power, secret societies, etc. And then there's also a lot of leaps of logic, and there's a lot of assumptions, and then there's a lot of speculation that happens on the part of researchers on the internet. And my goal with this is, as I said, to make it more of a true crime series and to present the different characters. It is mostly, I would say, Western focused, not to say that other powers don't have influence. Obviously, the Chinese government is very powerful. But when you start to study the history of these movements and the Rockefellers and others, you know, they're actually the ones who funded and helped the Chinese get as powerful as they are through Henry Kissinger and through others. And so a lot of this comes back to these same power centers, which really go back to the United Kingdom, to Europe. And, you know, in volume one, which you've seen, we explore this idea of the roundtable groups, which is an idea that was put forward by Carol Quigley, who was a professor at Georgetown University, and who was actually Bill Clinton's mentor. He's since deceased, but he wrote two books, one which was published after his death. The most famous one is called Tragedy and Hope. And it's this really epic tome, 1,000+ pages, where he was the first person to be granted access to the Council on Foreign Relations archives. And Council on Foreign Relations is another big Rockefeller-funded influential organization, which was founded in 1921. And they were spun off of a British group called the Royal Institute of International Affairs. And Carol Quigley gained access to their archives and was able to, through their own works and through their own acknowledgments, prove that this group has been influencing world affairs for at least the last 150 years. And it was interesting because he didn't necessarily agree with or disagree with them. He thought they seemed to have reasonable goals. He was quoted as saying he just wished that they would be more public, that the public deserved to know that this group was operating in the shadows. And it's interesting that the way he described that is he said that they would create an outward-facing group, so say the Council on Foreign Relations, which would have a public journal, as the Council on Foreign Relations does. It's called Foreign Affairs. But that group was actually just the outer ring representing the interests of another internal ring. And so you have this sort of series of round table groups, circles within circles within circles. And eventually we get a public facing group like the Council on Foreign Relations, the World Economic Forum. And we point at those people and say, hey, Klaus Schwab's a bad guy. He's doing all these things. But in reality, based on Carol Quigley's research and his evidence, they're actually just representatives of deeper hidden power. And I think that's an important point for people to understand, that the faces we see, the names that we know, are probably not really the true power. They're just the representatives. And one other quick point, that by the end of his life, Carol Quigley did actually come to believe that there was some danger. And early, during his life, he was actually upset that so-called conspiracy theorists were using his book to point to secret influence. And he said, you know, they're just taking my words out of context. And he you know, was famously kind of calling out conspiracy theorists, saying they don't understand what they're talking about. It's not as nefarious as they're making it seem. But by the end of his life, when his second book, which is called The Anglo-American Establishment, which was published after his death, in that book, he actually writes that anybody who cares about sovereignty should not let what happened in the UK happen in their country, which is to allow small groups of men secretly running things. And it seemed like by the end of his life, he realized the danger in this. And he did name them. He said that they call themselves the Society of the Elect. And then they had another group called the Society of the Helpers, which were sort of part of, you know, their infrastructure.
How organized?
Can you pause that and take that down for a second? We'll restart that in a moment. One thing he mentioned there, and I know that he talks about it later in the in this interview, but I want to go a little bit more in depth on this. Folks, please do yourself a favor and write down or remember the following phrase: revelation of the method. Revelation of the method. Now, if you do a search on that, you're going to find various articles, some written by people involved in the implementation of that, others looking into that, some archived articles and such. You can do your own research on that, but revelation of the method. And here's one of the important notes that guides the principles and the actions of the very power structure behind those who we see. Okay. And you're very familiar with this. Wait, if revelation of the method, if that doesn't ring a bell, or if it's not quite hitting in all cylinders, when I explain this to you, you're going to say, oh, yeah, okay, I get that. And what that is, really simply put, is those in power, the real power, they must tell you what they're going to do before they do it. And by you seeing this, reading, hearing, experiencing this, you have given your implied consent to allow them to do this. Okay. Now, when I heard that, I thought, okay, this sounds very familiar. Where do we see this? Where is it most prevalent? It's most prevalent in things of a biblical nature, of good versus evil. Yes, there is good. Yes, there is evil. You cannot acknowledge one and not the other. It just doesn't make sense. But the operational concept of revelation, of the method, is really the golden rule of those at the top of the pyramid. The concept of collective reality and free will consent. Now, I want you to think about this, because this is important, because we've all been victimized by this. Free will consent is frequently, if not 99.9% of the time, extracted without our conscious awareness. It's a method used to extract free will consent without your knowledge. Can you imagine that? Think about that. Revelation of the method is a method that's used to extract your free will, your consent, without your knowledge. How is that even possible, you might ask? Haven't we seen recent examples of that? Just think, any step along the way of the COVID crap that we saw, and the people involved in the implementation of that, some who were victims themselves, that does not give them a pass. I'm just saying. But this is based on a very hidden secret society, evil, demonic, satanic. I don't know. Can I get any deeper than that? It's a law that collective reality needs free will consent. Am I getting too deep here? Chat, let me know if I'm getting too deep. Or are you tracking on this? What do you think? Both forms run on the money, by the way. And Fred, good point. Extract free will without your knowledge. Absolutely. Deception, Satan. Man, right on. Okay. All right, good. Then I'll continue here. The importance of free will. God has given us free will. And maybe you're thinking I'm taking too long with this, but this is such an important point. God has given us free will. And the many times, and I'm not, again, this is not to disparage anyone, but many times I've heard, well, I had to take the COVID shot because I'd lose my job if I didn't. Well, right. And I fully understand that. Okay, I understand what you're saying to me. Okay, however, you had free will there. It would cost you, maybe cost you so much that it could destroy you. But nonetheless, there was that window of free will. Objective reality, think about this, operates without our attention. Now, if you think about the importance of free will and you think about objective reality, not your reality, but things going, reality, it operates without our attention. There are consequences, too, for trying to revoke or subvert free will. One last thing. All actions stem from individual free will. No following orders in the universe's view. In other words, you have free will. You exercise free will. And there are really no... it's free will. Now, there's predictive programming, which is the infusion or infusing collective consciousness. I don't want to get too deep into this. I don't want this to sound like I'm talking about some, you know, Hindu, Buddhist. No. But when you infuse collective consciousness with images and with events before they occur, that's predictive programming. Think of things like, The Simpsons. Haven't we seen examples or the cartoon shows that somewhat predict the future? Haven't we seen that? That's not done by accident or coincidence. That is done because the rule at the top is the revelation of method. Reality I'm going to stay away from that because, frankly, you know, we can go down many rabbit holes, but repetition is important as well in this predictive programming and in this revelation of method. Them telling you what they're going to do to you or what they're going to do, period. The normalizing events through repetitive exposure. Think about that. How many times have we seen that? Commercial after commercial after commercial. And how many times have we seen the same newscaster saying the same thing over and over and over and over and over again? How many times do we have to say climate change and global warming, it's just ad nauseum, right? There's this sense, I can get this out. You know what I mean. There are these uses of phrases, sound bites that prepare our minds subconsciously. There's this bypass, method of bypassing the conscious mind. Did you know? Think back. And I know some of us, like me, it would be very difficult to think back to like your first date. Anyway. A lot's going on that escapes your conscious mind, that sets it with your subconscious. And that's like your soulmate, right? You get that soulmate feeling. Well, some on the first dates, maybe not. But there are events, things, smells, movements, things that the subconscious mind find more appealing or is more appealing to the subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind is much more powerful than the conscious mind. And then you got the opposite too, the bad stuff, the shock, the negative use of shock through violent, fear-based media. And you know something? I'm getting so tired of the world is going to end tomorrow. By the way, I want to thank, if you're listening, and I'm sorry, I don't recall who mentioned this book this past, when we had our monthly meeting. I had said, yeah, I had read this book, The World, or The End of the World is, The End of the World is Just the Beginning. I had to get that right. Great book, by the way. But I'm tired of the fact that we don't need this, right? Because pretty soon we're all going to be if we keep listening to that stuff, we're all going to be in a fetal position wanting to watch kitty and doggy videos and drooling and asking somebody to help us with our oatmeal. I mean, really, look, God's got this. You and I, we have to stay in our lane. We have to pay attention to that voice that is the Holy Spirit within us to tell us, to guide us what to do, how to do things, to avoid or to recognize that revelation of method. Because there is a hidden objective here. The hidden objective is to get you to do something anything that they want you to do using your free will. Free will must be honored, even minimally. Allowing certain loopholes, of course. That's how they get you. Do you remember your dad said, that's how they get you. It's that warranty. But the responsibility becomes theirs once the method is revealed. So if you are subjected to the method, it's shown to you, this is what they're doing to you. It's now their responsibility, not yours. I say that in terms of their set of rules and guidelines. Do you know what I mean? In other words, they've got to tell you what they're going to do before they do it. You've heard that so many times. Well, that's what I'm talking about, the revelation of method. But if you identify it and say, see, that's what they're doing. Now the responsibility becomes theirs. And that is unacceptable to them. But essentially, all of humanity is manipulated, has been manipulated, is being manipulated into a predetermined trauma-based reality. Again, folks, in the chat, this is the only scale I have. Am I making sense? Eric the Tech, you can even say, shut up, or yeah, I'm getting it. Okay. Man of many words there. Actually, he's like Spider-Man. Telling you, that man has got some talent on cases. All right. There is a lot, and to close this segment out, because this is so important, because it overlaps the principles taught to us in the Bible versus the intent of the evildoers and those following the path of Satan. The importance of recognizing this tactic, this manipulation, allows us to reclaim our free will. So awareness raises, I'm going to throw this in there too. Because again, my objective here is not to be like other shows, and I don't want to do that. I want to offer you something that I think is important. But awareness of this raises frequency. There's a lot to be said about frequency, which creates a defense shield. And then if you have been, and you have been subjected to this massive programming, there's a process of healing. Healing resolves trauma. I've seen this with the workers at Shatter Ops and Vets for Child Rescue and other Save Them. I've seen this because you can identify a victim of trauma, and we have. Oh, it's horrible. But mere identification is nothing without the healing process. And one more thing about healing too, you know, it's a heck of a lot better if it's a heck of a lot better if you don't have to heal. If you never, I mean, if you didn't cut yourself, it's a lot better than having cut yourself and having to heal, right? So the importance of understanding this, to become aware of what's going on, is a step in the direction to protect yourself. I know this is like really heavy stuff. You got to be in my mind, okay? It's like a bunch of monkeys are fighting over one single banana. Anyway. But I think you can get it. I know you guys, ladies, men. I know you have. I know you've gotten it. You might get information from Steve Quayle, from Stan Dale, from, well, hey, Patrick Wood. You mentioned, we've had Patrick Wood on. I've had many discussions with Patrick Wood. Man, that guy is a sharp cookie. Wow. And others like him that go to that level, the depth. Now, some may not articulate it that well, like me. Now, I know Steve, some people say, oh, Steve doesn't articulate it well. Well, maybe not, but maybe he's on a different level than others. I don't articulate well, maybe I don't. But it's there. That's all I'm trying to say. It's there. Find someone you can identify with and follow that person. I understand we all have our frailties, our limits of understanding. But to get back to the big picture of all this, the big picture is this: everything that we see, whether it's political or social or economic, I talked about the economy, all of this is being dictated. And I just mentioned one method or one rule of those at the very top making the rules. And that's the revelation of the method. That's saying, this is what we're going to do to you. Just letting you know. But you got free will. So they show us. It doesn't have to be clear. It never is. It's never like, hey, on September 11th, 2000, it's not like that. Because they don't have, oh, there's rules, but the rules have loopholes. And if you're not smart enough to understand that, well, then you're just a moron. I'm just saying. Okay. So this is the basis, in my view, for everything that we're seeing. And folks, from the bottom of my heart, I mean, in the last several months, I have undergone a lot of introspection and a lot of thinking. You know, if somebody pulled my plug tomorrow, have I done a good enough job? And I don't know if many of you find yourself in that position. I mean, I look at my life. Eric Bowling, God bless that man. Okay. He's been through hell and back. Like so many of us, we've been, many people listening and watching this have been through hell and back. And you begin to doubt yourself. You begin to think, well, maybe I could have done better here, done better there. Yeah. But let me just say this. And I've said this before. God has given you a bigger windshield than a rear view mirror. Your windshield is bigger than your rear view mirror for a reason. I was talking with a nurse today, and she said, can't live in, I mean, we were talking about different things. She said, you know, you can't live in the past. You can think about it. You can learn from it. You can allow it to, in a good way, to shape your future, but you can't just lay there in the past and say, woe is me. Oh, all the heartache and hell that I've gone. No, that's not, we weren't appointed for that. Now, I don't want to sound preachy, but that's just something I thought of. Okay, so let's bring this back up. And he will get into this revelation method, not to the extent I did, but that was so important. And folks, again, when you go to his channel, and by the way, he has no idea who the hell I am. And he has, I mean, none of this, this is something I found on my own. So I'm not getting paid for it. All I'm just saying, this is what I found. It's helped me to better understand things and not be so damn biased. You know, yeah, it's the flipping Zionist Jews. They're the problem. They're the problem. Man, that to me exemplifies, is so illustrative of a dogma that has so much wrong with it, that shows not intellectual prowess, but intellectual bankruptcy, because you're too damn lazy to look further, to look deeper, and to look at all aspects. Okay, we'll pick up right now. This is where we left off. Go ahead.
You think this is that there are, so let's paint ourselves a picture that it's not Klaus Schwab or George Soros or Bill Gates, but it's someone behind them even. It's like an episode of 24. There's always a bad guy behind the bad guy behind the bad guy, right? And so these unnamed shadow figures, how organized are they if they are all over the world and in order to pull the strings? And maybe another question, what do they really want? What do they want the rest of us absolutely in their control so that they can what?
Great questions. As far as the first one, I think that there is levels of organization. Obviously, as I mentioned, the roundtable groups, the Bilderberg group, these type of meetings, these people are able to get together and sit down and have discussions. Does that mean they agree on everything all the time? I don't think so. I think that would be kind of just silly and sort of too simplistic to imagine that they're just on the same page, because this is a worldwide agenda. So you have people coming from different cultures, different languages, different backgrounds, and maybe even with their own kind of sub agendas. But what I like to tell people is that at the end of the day, this power structure is going to align with each other over the people 99 times out of 100. They will choose, even if they have their own minor differences, they're going to come together to accomplish their bigger aims. And that's just how things tend to work. That doesn't mean that there might not be, real true conflicts that happen behind the scenes. I tend to be very skeptical. Like, for example, when the news of the day is saying, Obama and Trump are having this argument, or Putin and Trump or whatever. Yeah. I tend to think that some of that's just soap opera drama. It doesn't mean there can't be some real elements of it. But again, even if it is real or parts of it are real, that doesn't mean that they're going to all of a sudden turn against this infrastructure, which has put them in power. Because from what I can see, there's nobody who rises to the level of prime minister or president without having at least been approved to some degree of this. And in terms of what they want, I think that there is some level of power. Obviously, wealth is one thing, but these people, especially one of the other groups that I explore in volume two, is what's known as the Venetian black nobility. This is another theory that a lot of people put forward, that actually at the top, the final roundtable group, if you will, is actually all the old houses that originate from Rome, from Venice, and which realized over time that if you're a king and a queen and you're very public, you eventually get beheaded or overthrown. But if you decide to kind of go to the background and you're just a celebrity royalty that nobody really pays much attention to and thinks you don't have power, you're more likely to stay in power. And there is some truth to that. When you study the land records of Europe, a lot of the actual land holdings go to these royal families, the king and queen of Netherlands, the royal houses that still exist and have existed for thousands of years. But these aren't the names that we know, Rothschild, Rockefeller, et cetera. These would be names that would probably be less, less familiar to most of us. So I do think that we're dealing with people who have an immense amount of wealth, and wealth is not the end goal for some of these folks. Maybe at the mid or lower levels, people are interested in money. I think it comes down to power. And then, of course, I do think that, as I talk about in the series, that there is a eugenicist agenda here. I do think that these people would like to reduce the population. I definitely think that that's one of the more kind of controversial final rabbit holes to go down. But I think there's an abundant evidence of that. And then I also mentioned that in the second volume, I interview people who have a wide range of opinions. So there's people who say it's the Jews, the Jesuits, the Masons, et cetera. But then there's others who say, like Mark Passio, he believes it's what he calls the dark Luciferians, that this is more of an occult kind of spiritual-ish agenda.
Okay, pause that. Oh, man. That you could spend a day just talking about what he said right there. Eugenics has always played a huge role in the objectives and the motives behind the people at the very top. Now, I'm not talking about the, nor is he, the presidents, prime ministers, leaders of the country, people we can see. The Venetian black nobility. Can I take a poll here, those in the chat? Have you heard and do you know about the black nobility? Just yes or no. You don't even have to. I mean, just yes or no. I'd be very interested to find out, because we can do a show on that. And when as I'm waiting for the answers here, when we go through this, okay, no, thank you, and be honest, because I've heard years ago, I heard of it, but had no clue what it was. So anyway, there is at the epicenter of this, and think about communism, think about what has happened with Roe v. Wade. Why such an outcry against overturning what, and that's a improper way of saying it, Roe v. Wade, overturning Roe. Why such an outcry? Why is it still that bell that went off that the trans and pro-eugenicists and women have started ringing at the overturning of Roe v. Wade? Why is that still ringing? Why is that still in the air? Because that's one of the key components at the very top of this pyramid. Eugenics is one of the key objectives of this entire demonic, satanic realm. At first, in some realms, it was you kill off those infirmed or those yet not born that will be born with physical problems or Down syndrome, whatever the case might be. Okay, where they think that you will be of no use to them, you must go. In a lot of cases, the famed eugenicist Margaret Sanger, the heroine of Hillary Clinton, she wanted a Planned Parenthood, and in fact did put a Planned Parenthood abortion charnel house on every block or almost every block in the black parts of New York City, and urged all the black women to get abortions. And what's happening today? So from this eugenics depopulation agenda that comes directly from the top, things like transgenderism, that evolves and gets refined. Things like homosexual marriage and the recognition of homosexual marriage, which is mind-blowing. But that, why? Why? Well, where's the procreation there? There is none. It's kind of a left-handed eugenicist program. The trans mutilation of children, again, among that is sterilization, but ultimately to destroy God's work, God's creation. That's why the things that we talk about, that's why this is important. Because without this, you will not have, people will not have a full understanding of, well, let's see here. People won't have an understanding of why Adam Schiff, is accused of withholding key January 6th documents. Or why Ed Martin sent a letter to Letitia James why she should resign. You may think, well, okay, those are political issues, and they are. But follow them back. Think motive, means, opportunity, and think about the bigger. And I could lose you, in trying to explain this, but think about the bigger objective. The chaos that they want to see happen. The killing off of others. And this is another thing, too. You see, hey, in Cincinnati, the five black Utes who railed on the two white victims, causing both brain trauma, were sentenced, there was a bond hearing, not sentenced, a bond hearing. And you see more and more of this happening. The division along racial lines. There are so many examples. They're plentiful. I won't go through them all. But we're seeing a rise in violence. Why do you think the National Guard is out in Washington, D.C.? Do I think that's a good idea? You know what? I've got my reservations about that. But that's all part of the process, isn't it? It's all part of the process, the larger process, because coming from the top down. And again, if you think about it, it will make sense. Just sit quietly and think about everything that's taking place and think about the people at the top and their objectives. I want to get into as well how we how we are getting out of this, at least partially. You had heard that gentleman speak of the deep state and what that encompasses. I'm going to slip this in here now, okay? This is, by the way, I just want to say this while I remember this. Ed Martin hanging out in front of Letitia's. Do you see this, folks? Eric, I don't know if you had a chance to see this. Probably not. Never mind. But folks, Ed Martin was, kind of, bumbling about in front of Letitia James's house, in front of her house, in a Columbo-esque raincoat. I loved it. Columbo is my absolute favorite television detective. And I've done the Columbo routine probably because I'm naturally good at it. But I'll tell you what, it's very effective because people do sometimes want to help you. And there's a couple aspects to it. People will try to help you, or people will get so sick of you because you're such a pest. It works. I mean, the concepts work. Never carried a gun. I think one episode he did, and that was when a later one, when his a family member who was getting married was kidnapped. But anyway, didn't need it. The intellectual part of the chess game, which is what we're talking about here, is much more important than anything else. Remember when I said, hey, to me, every problem is a nail and I got a hammer? No, that's not the best way to handle things. But I want to put this in here now. We talked about the deep state and about that guest did on Redacted. Was talking about the deep state and really, in a sense, was getting to how you fight it. I mean, ultimately, that series is how you identify it and then fight against it. And once more, I was thinking again, how do we even do this? Sure, we have to identify the people at the top, but in the meantime, what's the best way to handle the U.S. now? The West hopefully will come along, but the U.S. right now, what's the best way to handle this? There's one gentleman, retired Lieutenant Colonel Ivan Raiklin. He was interviewed and he was talking about fighting against the deep state, the method to do so, because Bondi ain't doing so well, or so it seems. Cash Patel, he's got a lot of, he's tied up at different bars and at the gym and, rearranging the furniture. Dan Bongino, I don't know what the hell he's doing, but he's going to have help from a Missouri attorney general. That's kind of different. That tells me there's going to be some stuff moving around at the FBI. But we can talk about this, but we also have to infuse this with some current events, right? And the other thing, too, we can talk about fighting against the different levels of that pyramid. But until we see results, it's all just smoke and mirrors and who and. So when I saw this clip, I thought, you know what? This is probably makes the most sense that I've heard. And I want to show you. I want you to hear this too. And you tell me what you think. In this case, I want to hear your advice. Do you think this will work? By the way, think when you watch this, think about this. Pam Bondi just took away the security clearances of 37 active CIA or intelligence officials. Okay. And you know what? They're not perp walks. It's not arrests, but it's a start. A start. Did I say Pam Bondi? Tulsi Gabbard is what I meant to say. ODNI. Grand juries are forming outside of D.C. about Crossfire Hurricane, about different issues. Well, watch this. This will tell you more than I can possibly try to cobble together here. Watch this. This is cut two. And again, you can watch all of these clips, even the ones I didn't get to, HagmanPI.com. Okay? And just click on the today's title for the episode after it goes up. And just peruse that. It's kind of like a newsletter that you have to get, you got to pick it up by yourself. All right, here's cut two. This is Lieutenant Colonel retired Ivan Raiklin. If you like him or don't like him, I think what he identifies and the approach and the targets, man, I thought was spot on and fit well with what we're talking about. Cut two. Here it is.
All right. I have been following you because I always tell the folks out there, you're a great strategic thinker. What is your advice to Bondi, to Ed Martin, to Kash Patel, to Gabbard, as they go after these players? How do we get retribution for all of these things I just laid out?
Now, great question. So I think I've laid it out a couple of years ago, but it looks like our institutions are finally catching up in the sense that as Director Gabbard starts to uncover this information, other elements of our government, particularly the executive branch, needs to continue to dig into this, no pun intended, with her director's initiative group. But the rest of the government needs to go ahead and dig into this evidence and information related to these folks that, to be honest, most of these folks are either on or staffers of the list that I created, I believe it was last year at this point, about 1,400 individuals. And then they need to methodically go through the process of the last 10 years hoaxes. You've mentioned some of them. Let's go through them in detail. Number one, 2016 to 2017, we had the Crossfire Hurricane op, right? The illegal spying operation, Fourth Amendment violations, First Amendment violations. I mean, all these different things.
Pay attention
the 2017 to 2019 Mueller probe was to cover up that Crossfire Hurricane. Then we went into the Adam Schiff led and the whistleblower scheme that, and the two attorneys need to be looked at. Their clearances have been pulled so far, at least for one of the attorneys, Mark Zayed, who represented Eric Cherumella and the Vindman brothers tangentially. And then Andrew Bakaj, who happened to be a CIA attorney that worked for none other than John Brennan, the former CIA director. And then we went into after that failed with the impeachment hoax one led by Adam Schiff. Then we went into a 2019 to 2020 scheme, which was, I call it, the Fauci funded lab incident that resulted in 39, not just six, 39 states ran their elections unconstitutionally in the 2020 election because the non-legislative actors that said due to COVID, we're going to change the way we do our elections, that rendered them illegitimate. So the 2020 election heist. Then we go into the January 6th fake surrection, Fed surrection. Obviously, that was Nancy Pelosi led because she was the senior official, government official in the joint session on that day, along with Mike Pence, the presiding officer. That needs to be uncovered. And we're starting to see evidence that Mike Pence, Paul Ryan were in on some of these things, if not all of them, with recent disclosures. And then we go into the cover-up to the January 6th Fed surrection led by our beloved Jamie Raskin. Keep in mind that Jamie Raskin's wife, Sarah, was one of the 39 that unmasked General Flynn during that entire 2016 to 2017 transition period. Now, before I close up on this, I want to say, The cover-up to the January 6th Fed surrection was led by one of those 51 spies who lied, David Buckley, as the staff director for that committee. And he was one of the 51 spies who lied. Close. He was the inspector general for, there you go, his picture. He was the inspector general for John Brennan. A lot of roads lead back to John Brennan, Pelosi, Jamie Raskin, Adam Schiff,
Ivan,
and the list goes on.
Let me ask you, so you have all these players, 1,400 of them, the list that you've made. Do you go methodically? Do you put them under oath? Do you subpoena them before Congress? Do you have FBI agents interview them just in a conference room? How do you want to go about targeting them?
Fantastic. I like that question, too. I would start with this. So the very first thing we need to do is educate the country that they were duped by the very individuals. A lot of people that say, oh, this is all, you know, this is all true and real, where we can uncover them. How do we uncover them? First off, I think we need to disclose the government holdings, declassifications, and then also those that aren't classified information, basically their communications, if you will, right? I think Tulsi Gabbard's team is doing that based on what we're seeing. In addition to that, I would recommend that, depending on the hoax, right, as it applies to the January 6th hoax, J.D. Vance is in a very unique position as both the vice president, the number two guy in the executive branch, and the senior senator, if you will, as the president of the Senate, a constitutional actor. He can go ahead and order his Senate sergeant at arms to release all communications in the run up on and after January 6th as it relates to January 6th, because this year the Senate sergeant at arms is the chair of the Capitol Police Board. These are this is like insider baseball game that probably J.D. Vance doesn't even know that he has the ability to do this. That will then, on one side, he can disclose the legislative communications with the executive branch, internal deliberative documents from the General Counsel of the U.S. Capitol Police, as well as everything from the DOJ, DHS, FBI, and all those subordinate elements to the J6 op. Expose it all. In addition to that, we can get private information. Guess what? Maybe the president or somebody in the White House calls Dana White as the new board member of Facebook so that he goes and digs into Facebook Messenger communications of these individuals that have Facebook accounts. And if they didn't communicate on Facebook, then we go ahead and take a look at their Twitter 1.0 direct messages and communications. And you know what? If they didn't communicate there, maybe they communicated on LinkedIn. Guess what? I was a target of this entire scheme by the previous illegitimate regime. They went into my Google Cloud. They went into my Apple, iCloud, my PayPal, my Twitter, my Facebook, my Instagram, my LinkedIn, all of it. These people need to be scrutinized at the same level. And while I came out scot-free because I live a clean life, they will not. And that's the evidence that we can showcase to the entire country on, you know, through our media to basically debunk all of the mainstream media and their complicit behavior in this entire RICO scheme that, by the way, does not have a statute of limitations because sedition, seditious conspiracy, and treason have a capital punishment as a punishment at the end of it, which means there is no statute of limitations if there's a capital punishment nexus with a felony crime.
I could also make the argument.
You can cut that. Folks, again, I would urge you to watch the entire segment. In fact, Grant Sinchfield is a fabulous interviewer, and he funny guy too. But he's got a lot of information. That segment is valuable. And what he said, the method, and folks in the chat, again, the only metric I have that I can use. Does that sound like a plan, like a viable plan? Because that gentleman did identify about 1,400 embedded SES employees appointed other appointed individuals within the federal government, within cabinet positions and in other positions last year that need to be rooted out. In fact, with extreme prejudice, fired and arrested, in my view. Even up to and including the Adam Schiffs, who, by the way, has a legal defense fund. Did you see that? Have you donated for that? Yeah, to that, I should say. Oh, my goodness, can you believe this? And speaking of Adam Schiff, that goes right along with this. Again, think of this like, I don't know, like an umbrella kind of thing, but a more pointed umbrella. At the top, you've got all of these people holding the strings and the people below. When you get down to people like Adam below me, Schiff, I'm sorry for that. Adam Schiff, pencil neck geek. I mean, you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel. But speaking of Adam Schiff, there was something that came out. Let me see if I have it here. Do I have an image? Oh, I was talking about Ed Martin too, and Letitia James. Ed Martin, you watch that man. Watch him. Watch what he does. This guy is a beautiful exemplar of a very articulate Columbo, effective yet articulate. And I will say this, he will get results. In the show notes, I do have a letter that Ed Martin sent about to Letitia James's lawyers, saying essentially she needs to resign. And the implication there was, we're coming after her. Because you know, I mean, it's there's little doubt. I don't know how many people watched the segment. I think it was on social media. I think it was on X, where he was standing in front of her townhouse. You know, the one that supposedly had only three stories or something like that, when in fact it had four, and the number of units was was deliberately misstated. And again, this is for personal tax benefit, personal benefit, and other means. Essentially the same thing that she accused or charged President Trump with. How ironic is that? But Ed Martin's out there, and he was accosted by a female Karen. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't use a female. I don't even know how to describe it. What are you doing here? Man, you will never know how many times in my career I was accosted by different people working in the field. It just made my life a living hell for different cases. What are you doing here? Why are you here? In open court, there was a case where, I'm reminiscing now, I sound like my grandfather probably, where a subject testified that under oath in open court, that when I was knocking on his door, he was standing behind the door with a loaded 12 gauge shotgun, just waiting for me to open the storm door, the screen door, to knock on the main door. Yeah, that got my attention. Anyway, just keep your eye on what Ed Martin does. But let's go back to Adam Schiff for a second to keep this relevant. So we're not spending the entire show in the ether of intellectual blossoming. Okay. Let's take a look at Adam Schiff. This is cut three. He is a kid. The more you look into this, and folks, you know this, but to hear it and to have it proved at this level is a game changer. But Adam Schiff, he withheld key January 6th documents. Ed Martin, speaking of him, he joined Matt Gaetz on his show. I don't know when it was, a couple of days ago. They were talking about this. But think about the balls this guy's got or doesn't have. I don't know. Think about the temerity of Adam Schiff. And I will say this, he is scared. Schiff is absolutely scared. I was talking to somebody very, very well connected in DC circles, briefly, who said, man, Schiff is shifting his pants. And I said, well, that's nice. But my question is, will there be anything done? The response from this individual was, if there will be any justice meted out, Schiff will be an exhibit for that justice. Is it true? I don't know. That was said to me by somebody who should know. But watch this clip and listen to what, listen, oh, just listen to this. Because, and while you're listening, think about how close we came to being embroiled in a J6 trial. But more importantly, think about those who were, those who had their lives upended by this satanic, by these Lucifer boot-looking punks, one of which is Adam Schiff. This is Cut 3.
You've said in other interviews that current Senator from California Adam Schiff may have destroyed evidence as part of his role in the January 6th committee when he was in the House. Why is this concerning to you?
Well, look, first of all, as you know, Matt, the scope of my work here at the Department of Justice has included investigating January 6th, investigating the 2020 election and how it's treated. But in this case, what we have is people actively destroying documents that have an impact on cases that were before the courts, that were in the courts. So, for example, the Select Committee on January 6th announced publicly that they had two or three divisions. They hired investigators, in fact, including a former member of Congress, and they had them investigate these divisions. These are right. So, and then when they went to do their final report, all the research disappeared. All the research went away. When Adam Schiff, what has come out publicly, not from me, again, his lawyers are commenting on it, what has been disclosed about his leaking, how he's talked about his leaking, destruction of documents. These are all things that are way beyond any defense. You know this, Matt. You were there. You have a defense constitutionally for, you know, speech and debate. That has to do with your job. It doesn't have to do with all the conduct that you do. And by the way, there's an exception for felony misconduct also in there. So we're going to get to the bottom of it. I think Senator Schiff has attacked me and others so vociferously, you start to say, what's the problem here? If you're innocent, let's see what you've got, and we'll see what happens.
I am probably one of only six or seven congressmen or former congressmen that has gone through those files from the January 6th committee. And here's what I can tell you: you're going to find when you and your team really get into that. They tracked so purposefully how any of their targets spent money, moved, and communicated. I mean, like, I was going through files that you could see where Bernie Kerik bought a cup of coffee in D.C., rest his soul, and there you could see where Charlie Kirk had got a van for people who wanted to come to the Capitol on that day, or a bus. But then there were some files with some of their targets that were just totally empty. I opened the Steve Bannon file and it was completely empty. And what I think is so interesting about your response is that you're actually looking at this through the lens of what else was going on in the legal system, because that is the true definition of weaponization. If they were taking things out of their congressional duties that were supposed to go to fortify democracy and instead using that as a veneer to try to ignite criminal prosecutions that or even feed criminal prosecutions that weren't a consequence of following the facts and the law, but that were just a way to blunderbuss their targets. And so, you know, one of the problems I found, and this is a real intricate area of law, destroying committee records is illegal. However, the committee can determine what committee records are.
Right.
And so in this case, they could just say, oh, yes, well, we've just determined that the Steve Bannon files are all not committee record. Anything we saved is a committee record. Anything we destroyed isn't. And it makes you wonder whether or not maybe some of those laws need to be revisited by Speaker Johnson and Leader Thune to ensure that you don't have the destruction of this stuff going forward. Are you confident with what you're able to get access to and assess that you're going to be able to very thoroughly make your prosecutorial judgments?
Well, look, I've been involved with our mutual friend Tulsi Gabbard at DNI, and she has gone, and I hope people have tracked what I call the birthday of the Russia hoax, which was revealed by Tulsi. That it actually was born on Friday, December 9th, 2016, and it was done by the Obama White House in a special meeting, aided by the Washington Post. This is in the record. This is indisputable. This is not like me and you debating. And what we go forward from there, and you say that was the Russia hoax that was used to almost cripple the Trump administration by design. Then you go forward to 2020 and you say, what happened on January 6th and afterwards? And to your point, Matt, what they did with this select committee was they weaponized the power of Congress. They were aided by the media, and they were often aided by the Article III courts and the prosecutors. And they took the hoax and they pounded out a message. And frankly, they brainwashed 40% of the country, 50% of the country. There's still people are still sick with it because they were lied. So what is our goal? One is to hold people that do things that are destructive and against the law accountable. I want to do that. We're going to do that. I promise you. But we're also trying to get to the truth. And so when you have a Tulsi Gabbard who can say, here was some of the truth, I can tell you, we've been going through the records, emails of this Department of Justice from the Biden era, and we're seeing who was doing what. I'll give you a quick example. They put everybody on January 6th that was arrested, minus maybe 100, onto the terrorism watch list. And when you said, wait a second, you're on the terrorism watch list, why? You're supposed to be a terrorist or a member of a terrorist group or another criteria. The other criteria was, we just wanted to put you on. And when you were pardoned by Donald Trump, all 1,500 plus went off the terrorism watch list. Well, that just proves it wasn't a terrorism watch list. It's a list to punish you when you go to the airport.
Yeah, you can cut. I think that was the end of it. I think that's where I had to cut off. Anyway, to me, that's valuable because, again, you're looking at now the concept of justice. You're looking at the exposure on one end, the things that we heard happened but didn't have the confirmation. Now we have the confirmation where you had, at the direction of the J6 committee, destroyed documents that were instrumental that needed to be preserved. And believe me, if you've ever been involved in a lawsuit, I will again say this. The process is the punishment. Get a letter that identified. When you receive a letter, stated differently and better, when you receive a letter that instructs you to preserve documents and list the documents that you are to preserve, believe me, you do not want to err on the side of, you want to err on the side of caution. And then you are responsible. You are the responsible custodian for those records. And of course, you have to have an attorney or attorneys, plural, who are specialized in one aspect or another in different things that you're facing. So just the threat, or just the mention that, hey, you're part of this. We are investigating you. This is a notice that you're under investigation. You are to preserve these documents. And you can ask Eric, how many file cabinets that we had to reserve in dust. So, but now things are changing. So, my question at this point, are we to take a look at the things that are happening? Gabbard's, she just cut 40% of ODNI, the Office of Intelligence. She just fired essentially 40%, or she's operating on 40%. I'm not sure which. Numbers 40%. I think she got rid of 40% of the staff at the National Intelligence. Are we headed in the right direction? Are we holding the? Are we beginning to hold the right people accountable? Kind of like working in a sense narcotics cases. well, as they should be worked, or where you start with a street level buy and work your way up. Of course, until you find out that the CIA is the one that's the major distributor. But in a perfect world, that's the way you do things. So my question is, we see the news headlines like, okay, you heard Ivan Raiklin talking about the 1,400 that need to go. There's a small dent made already in that number. You heard Adam Schiff proved it now that he caused to have destroyed key J6 documents. You have Ed Martin out there just loaded for bear against the J6 people, against Letitia James, against the people that have committed fraud. You have you have one thing I didn't show you. You have John Solomon, who is kind of, if certain publications are mouthpieces for the CIA, John Solomon may very well be a mouthpiece for the Trump administration, and I'm not, that's just the way I see it. Okay, in other words, he's the mouthpiece. He's the person who says things that they want to get out. But that aside, he's not wrong in many cases. But you got John Solomon now talking about the Clintons, about a decade of how they, the Clintons, how they cozied up to Russia. And then, of course, we can't forget the other matters facing us, the threat from artificial intelligence, the threat of central bank digital currency and currencies that will track your every move, that will really give you a or part of a social credit score, that they could take your money away from you. This is where we're headed. Getting back at the top of that pyramid. These are some of their goals. So how do we fight them? How do we fight those goals? Are we doing it now? Are we doing it now as Ed Martin laid out? Are we doing it now as Solomon? And you can, in fact, you can watch this. That's clip 7 in the show notes. About the Clintons. We're fighting back now. Is that the right way? Is that the way? Is that the only way to go? We now, from a programming perspective, should we get more into things like revelation of method? The tactics they use, is that more valuable to you than the other stuff? And you can leave your answer in the chat, yes or no. And I will weigh that after the show. A lot of things are going on right now that, I mean, people are talking about the Jordan, and I won't play these for you, but Jordan Peterson on digital ID, you know, many people have acquiesced and for one reason or another, and again, I'm not disparaging anyone to real ID and now the push for digital ID. Digital ID is what makes the social credit systems possible. I wanted to touch one thing. This was just my interest in this. I don't know how many people remember a while back there was a sheriff that shot a judge in his chambers. It was a 3-minute, 4-minute video. And you could see the sheriff walking in. The judge was sitting behind his desk. And after a minute or two, the sheriff, or people leave the judge's office chambers. And the sheriff takes out a gun and bang, bang, and the judge is dead. Something came out about that. You know, there's always a backstory to these. Someone came forward and said the judge who was shot dead actually ran a depraved sex ring. Now, the reason I'm mentioning it now or in this context, very simply, is because, one aspect of the larger pyramid is the currency of the children, is the sexual depravity. You're seeing things now, I think, that are only going to get worse or better, depending on your perspective, but people are going to be held to account, whether it's through the justice system or through their own methods. Whether or not this was that, I don't know, but it certainly, when I read through it, it reminded me of how far we have fallen, how much we have embraced the depravity, we as a society, not each of us, and the lack of morals, the lack, it's just horrible how we treat others, our children, how we treat children, period. All of this combined, I'm just saying, as we close the show, I'm saying it's all part of this larger agenda. Certainly, it's laid out in the Bible. I'm not promoting any books or anything like that. I'm just saying but it's bigger. Back in 19, I remember this day very well, 1987, when I was investigating that one specific crime, as you will read if you want to buy my book, The Devil Within, that's coming out soon. I had a very, very good investigator come up to me and said, you know, you're on the right track, but you have a problem. I said, what's my problem? He said, you're not thinking big enough. You're not thinking big enough. And I thought I was, but I wasn't. And I think in a lot of cases today, we are not thinking big enough. We have to think bigger. We have to understand that we're fighting this war. And you know what? We will ultimately win this war, as Daniel Holding said last week. But not without a lot of bumps in the road. Not without getting knocked around a lot. But you know, we can mitigate some of those injuries by thinking bigger and fighting differently, but making sure that not only are we on God's side, but God is on our side. And that, folks, is my prayer for each and every one of you. I want to thank you for joining me tonight. Hey, don't forget, send Rob Pugh, the editor of Wisconsin Christian News, a happy birthday. Go to WisconsinChristianNews.com. Get the contact thing and just say, hey, Rob, happy birthday. You know, it'll lift his spirits, I promise. He's a good guy and does a lot of work. And I want to thank everyone in the chat. Thank you so much for everyone who's been there every single time. God bless each and every one of you. God bless all of you. And thanks for contributing.